Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, why multiple proposed data center projects in Northeast Pennsylvania are fueling community pushback, political change, and a debate over how quickly these developments should move. We talk with WVIA's Kat Bolus about what's happening and what it could mean for other communities. The Rondout Valley School District is proposing 26 staffing cuts, some through layoffs, others through retirements, and the community's pushing back there. We'll have the details from a packed school board meeting coming up. Wayne County Veterans Affairs is ramping up efforts to reach every veteran, including those who may have given up benefits years ago. And when the Catskills' biggest hotels competed not just for comedians, but for the most sought-after cantors, we'll hear more about showbiz and spirituality, plus a special live edition of Liberation Station after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Pakistan's foreign minister says that indirect talks are taking place through messages between the U.S. and Iran about the war. Writing online, the Pakistani foreign minister says his country is relaying the messages. As Iran and the U.S. lay out their demands to stop the war, Israel is speeding up its military strikes in Iran ahead of a possible ceasefire. That's according to a person briefed on the matter who spoke with NPR's Daniel Estrin in Tel Aviv.
The person who did not have authorization to speak publicly says the Israeli military is speeding up its targeting in Iran over the next 48 hours, focusing on trying to hit Iran's arms factories as much as possible in case a ceasefire is declared. While the U.S. and Iran both want a deal to end the war, there are wide gaps between their demands. Pakistan is emerging as a potential host for talks. An official in Islamabad, not authorized to speak publicly, tells NPR Pakistan's interior minister held a secret meeting with Iran's ambassador today. Israel wants to keep pressing on in the war, and Iran continues targeting Israel with missile fire towards central Israel and the Jerusalem area. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Senate talks appear stalled in an effort to end the partial shutdown of the Department of Homeland Security. TSA agents still aren't getting paid. Nearly 500 have quit, and that's also increased wait times for air passengers trying to clear security. Pascual Contreras is a TSA officer and union leader in Phoenix. He and colleagues are not going to work. That's because they can no longer afford to work without pay.
I already feel shame because I can't afford to pay my bills and I can't afford to go to work. And now I feel the burden of leaving my coworkers.
Some airport security lines range up to 30 minutes, but the wait to clear security at Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston is now 4 hours. Stocks open mixed this morning as the EPA relaxes summer fuel regulations in a bid to keep gasoline prices in check. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 60 points in early trading.
The EPA will allow gas stations to keep selling fuel with a higher ethanol content this summer. The move is likely to cause some additional air pollution. It's intended to keep a lid on gas prices, which are currently averaging just under $4 a gallon. Critics aren't convinced it will be much help. Gas prices have jumped about a dollar a gallon since the U.S. and Israel launched their war against Iran. No breakthrough in Congress yet on funding for TSA agents. Delta Airlines said this week it's suspending the special treatment it normally offers lawmakers, so they'll be treated just like everyone else. New applications for unemployment benefits rose only slightly last week. 210,000 people applied for jobless aid. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are now up 64 points. You're listening to NPR. Ousted Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro is scheduled to appear in U.S. District Court in Manhattan today. He and his wife, Celia Flores, want to have their federal drug trafficking charges thrown out. U.S. troops seized them in Caracas in early January and brought them to New York. The Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, is underway in the Dallas-Fort Worth area of Texas. It is an influential conservative gathering. The Texas newsroom's Blaise Gainey reports it can be an indicator of the direction of the Republican Party.
The Republican Party has been successful for decades right here in Texas, more recently thanks to the Latino population. Rolando Rodriguez takes some of that credit. He formed Latinos for Trump in 2016 and believes that support helped the president turn South Texas border counties red for the first time in a century. He says the reason why is because they believe in Trump's plans for the economy.
What they want is jobs for the economy to flow. and it is working. I mean, not as fast as we would like for it to happen, but it's working.
Earlier this month, Trump visited South Texas and announced a $300 billion project to build the first oil refinery in the U.S. in 50 years. For NPR News, I'm Blaise Ganey in Grapevine.
Award-winning author Tracy Kidder has died of lung cancer at his daughter's home in Boston. He was 80. Kidder won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award for his 1981 narrative work, The Soul of a New Machine. It explored the new field of computers. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, providing access to opportunities that help people achieve financial stability, upward mobility, and economic prosperity regardless of race, gender, or geography. Kauffman.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. A proposed wave of massive data centers in northeastern Pennsylvania is sparking backlash, political upheaval, and some new questions about how fast these projects should move forward. In Archbald in Lackawanna County, residents have packed public meetings, raised concerns about environmental impacts and energy demand, and in some cases pushed for changes in local leadership. At the same time, state policies designated to fast-track major development projects are now under scrutiny, with some local officials calling for a slowdown when it comes to data centers. For more, we're joined by Kat Bolus of our public media neighbors at WVIA. She's been covering the story. Kat, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, you've been covering this closely, but maybe a lot of listeners don't know about it. What's happening in Archbald right now, and why has this data center proposal become such a flashpoint?
Right. So in Archbald, and it's kind of in the middle of Lackawanna County, there's six data center campuses proposed within just one borough. So it's the most data center proposals of any municipality in Pennsylvania. And it has to do with a bunch of different things. Zoning ordinance from 2023, a new overlay that was put in place in November of 2025. And residents are just unhappy. They feel like developers and property owners are being favored over the greater good or the greater community in Archbald, which kind of sits along the Lackawanna River in the valley here in northeast Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so I happened to be over in that area on the weekend and drove by. I was aware that there were these proposals for these data centers, but then I saw the visual of the trees that had been cut in in just one area. I was amazed by what I saw. And then I looked at a map and saw where these six data centers are proposed, and it's so much larger than I thought. How big are these projects?
Yeah, so I think the one data center campus has 18 buildings proposed at it. Because with data centers, it's especially the large scale, they call them like the hyperscale data centers. There's never just one building. It's always multiple buildings with multiple generators and kind of multiple like infrastructure set up around those buildings on that campus. So one proposal is 18 buildings. Another proposal is 7 buildings. There's Wildcat. I believe that's about 13 or 14 buildings. And these buildings are huge. Most of them are the size of around a football field. Where you saw Project Gravity, that was one of the first data center proposals in Archibald. That's where all the trees are torn down. Mm-hmm. They don't have full local approval yet, but they do own the land, so they could tear those trees down. But each of their buildings, I think I compared it to like the size of the White House. Like wow. Each of them will be the size of the White House. And I'm not totally sure on the number there. It's kind of a lot of numbers to keep track
yeah.
of.
Well, there's a lot going on, and your reporting shows that all of this is leading to some shakeups in borough leadership there. What exactly mm-hmm. happened? And talk about some of these packed meetings and strong community reaction.
Yeah, so in November of 2025, Archbold Borough Council voted to put in a data center overlay. So essentially what it is it's a zoning term and overlay, and it just puts another use on a property. So like a property could be industrial, but then you add that data center overlay kind of like they say on the top of it. So it could be industrial or it could be data center. So residents had proposed their own ordinance. They wanted to keep data centers strictly to kind of like the industrial side of the borough instead of having them all over the borough. And it doesn't seem that the council took that into consideration. So they voted to pass this overlay, which essentially opened the door for all of these data center projects to come in and then apply for conditional use. So to essentially apply to build in the borough. So every one of these council meetings has been packed. So then we had, you think I used regime change in the headline,
yeah.
But we had a regime change last week. So a couple council members had either not run for re-election or their seats were up. So there's kind of a new council majority in place. And so they voted out that old council majority that was president, vice president, and president pro temp. And they added in a new president, vice president, and president pro temp, who are kind of, I don't want to say they're like not in favor of data centers, but they're definitely a lot more skeptical than the previous administration seemed. They didn't really talk a lot about their stance and why they voted for the overlay.
And are the community concerns mostly environmental, quality of life, trust in government, or all of the above?
It's all of the above. It kind of started where like these projects are very close to homes. So data centers are a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation. If the power goes out, then the generators kick in. They have to run because we as a society, you know, we rely on all the data that's stored in these data centers. It's how you do online banking. It's how you save photos to the cloud. It's, you know, medical records are stored in data centers. So they have to run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So residents are concerned, you know, if you're going to build this next to my home, what does that sound like for me? How does that change my quality of life? If the power goes out and, you know, 14 generators have to kick on at the same time, does that put carcinogens in the air? The water usage, the servers inside data centers are super hot. So the industry uses like water in systems to kind of keep the servers cool. So residents are concerned about is their water going to be impacted? And I think the water becomes a bigger issue in some of the communities that are on wells. For instance, there's a couple proposals in the Poconos, and a lot of the residents who show up to those meetings, you know, in the hundreds are wondering how that affects their aquifer, if their well will run dry, if the data center next door starts also using the well for water.
Yeah.
And then it just goes back. It's kind of just quality of life across
well,
the board.
Well, yeah. From what I saw, too, just that one area that I saw, I was really surprised to see that area butting up against a residential community, literally someone's backyard, and how close that is. So I'm assuming residents feel like they're left out of this process, but how much control does the borough actually have? You've also reported on concerns about Pennsylvania's fast-track permitting program. Talk a little bit about why that and how that plays into all of this.
Yeah, so Pennsylvania's fast-track permitting program essentially like provides coordination amongst agencies that provide permits for large-scale large-scale economic projects. So there's, I think, there's nine projects total in Fast Track. Well, there's nine projects total on the Fast Track website. Five of them are data centers. Three of them are in Northeast Pennsylvania. So the residents in Archbold had found out that Project Gravity, that's the one that you saw with the trees down, may or may not have been in Fast Track. So I asked the state and they said, sure, it was accepted in September, but they haven't done X, Y, and Z. So, you know, it's kind of pending whether they stay in the program or not. But the residents in Archibald, they're like, well, it's close to a residence. They don't have an end user yet. They're buying a mobile park home where they could displace people from that home. How does that fit the qualities of a fast track program where things like the Bellwether District in Philadelphia are on that, which is this major economic development in Philadelphia that kind of needs a lot of permitting from a lot of agencies in Pennsylvania. So I think residents in Archibald are conflicted about why a program or a project like Project Gravity would appear to have been accepted into something like Fast Track, which seems to have pretty onerous stipulations.
You mentioned that Archibald is the municipality with the largest number of proposed data centers in the entire state of Pennsylvania. How does this fit into the broader data center boom in the state, and is the state prepared for this level of development?
So that depends. I mean, the governor had addressed data center developments in his budget address in February. He came up with grid standards. They are kind of four standards that he wants the data center industry to follow, including providing their own power, making sure there's transparency, making sure they're working with the local level. I think that everyone, myself included, is trying to get a handle on how fast this industry is moving into Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
There's 29 proposals in just Northeast Pennsylvania for data centers. It's not just Archibald. It's, you know, Ransom Township, which is also in Lackawanna County. It's Clifton and Covington Townships, also in Lackawanna County. You have two or three in the Poconos. And then when we get down into Luzerne County, that's where Amazon Web Services is building their data centers. So there is a lot going on up here.
Yeah.
We cover all of those counties.
Absolutely. And I know you're working on covering it. What are the next key moments to watch here? And is there like one question you think is still not getting enough attention here?
I think the one question that's not being answered at a higher level is the environmental impacts. A lot of these data centers are proposing to use diesel backup generators, and residents keep asking, what does that do to our air quality? And Commissioner, Lackawanna County Commissioner Bill Gaughan, earlier this month, he wants to see if the county could draft an air quality ordinance for all of Lackawanna. And I think that's a question that's really not been answered yet, as well as, you know, if we have the power. I mean, I could go into this, but like PJM, you know, essentially provides power to the utility companies.
And PJM is the power company?
So no, PJM is like the regional grid provider.
Okay.
So they provide power for 13 states plus Washington, D.C. And then a utility company like PPL kind of then supplies their power.
Right.
But PJM is saying, you know, we don't have enough power.
Right.
So that's a whole other question, too.
There's so much to get a handle on. And I know that you're going to be covering it. And I know we're going to be talking again. That's Kate Bolus,
yeah,
from WVIA. You can read her excellent reporting at WVIA.org or listen as well. Our public media neighbors over there. Kat, thank you so much. And a lot to pay attention to. We appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good day.
Also, the Upper Delaware Council is hosting a public presentation, Data Centers in the Delaware River Basin, an update. That's Tuesday, March 31st at 6:30 p.m. It's at the UDC's Narrowsburg office, and there's also a Zoom option to request the Zoom link for remote participation. You'll need to contact the UDC office. Talk to Stephanie Driscoll at 845-252-3022 or email Stephanie at upperdelawarecouncil.org. That information is also at their website. Coming up, an Ulster County school unveils a school budget with staff cuts and unfilled positions. Residents and students are pushing back. That story after the break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Sullivan Allies Leading Together, committed to ensuring the safety of our community. Protect those most important by keeping medications in a secure space. Be a part of the solution. More at saltcares.com.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Michael Pollan. He's the author of best-selling books on everything from the consequences of what we eat to the history and current popularity of psychedelics. In his newest book, Pollan investigates what might be his biggest subject yet, consciousness. It's called The World Appears. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures, here on this public radio station.
Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A math teacher, a school psychologist, and library aides are among 26 positions the Rondout Valley Central School District in Ulster County is cutting or leaving unfilled. Their school budget proposal includes eliminating 16 staff positions and not replacing 10 others due to retirements. The district unveiled their $83.5 million budget during a school board meeting on Tuesday night. Hundreds of people filled the high school auditorium just hours after students staged a walkout to protest the cuts. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar was at the meeting and has more.
Kate Nerko is an 8-year-old student at Kerhonkson Elementary School. She says that her teachers and counselors are what make her feel safe and get through hard days. Nerko is one of hundreds of people who filled the Rondout Valley High School auditorium on Tuesday evening, where the district unveiled its latest proposed budget. It includes 16 staffing cuts and 10 unfilled roles after retirements. Nerko says losing her teachers would be challenging.
If you take those people away, school will be harder for kids. We will have less help and some kids will feel scared or left out. I am only in third grade, but I know this is not fair. The people who work with kids every day should not be cut while administrators get more money. Please keep the adults in touch with everyone.
The proposed school budget includes a $5.8 million budget shortfall. Superintendent Paul Spadaro says that declining student enrollment and rising healthcare costs have squeezed the district into a tight financial spot.
Our state aid went up 1%, which is an extra revenue of $372,368. And when our health insurance goes up 16% and our aid only goes up 1%, that starts creating a budget gap.
The budget also proposed raising the property tax levy and using some of the school's reserves to close the gap. But many said that the cuts would change the fabric of the district's community. The school board heard nearly 2 hours of public comment on Tuesday night from parents, students, and school staff.
Teachers are not just a line item in a budget. They are amazing humans that give life to our schools. When I hear 26 positions are being cut, I worry that we aren't just reducing staff, we are reducing opportunities for our students.
In my 21 years of teaching, my 18 years in this district, I've worked at every level, from Marbletown to the middle school to the high school. I have never done that work with a library aide, without a library aide, and we should not begin now.
An observation. All the cuts seem to be in special ed, SEL, and DEI. Does that make anybody curious?
You cannot champion special education and simultaneously cut the school psychologists and speech therapists who make those programs possible. Removing them does not trim the edges of a premier district, it pulls out the foundation.
You say you want every student to feel they belong, but you are cutting the very people who make that possible, the psychologists, the counselors, the support staff. Our children rely on them. These aren't just support staff, they are the primary defense against the isolation, the anxiety, the depression. COVID kind of happened a few years ago and it's still, you know, there.
George LeBlanc is a senior crisis counselor who's been with the district for 12 years. He helps students who may be a danger to themselves or others. Last week, LeBlanc was on a field trip with students when he found out by email that his job might be eliminated.
I scoured my emails to find this and found one entitled Confidential Discussion Opportunity, and nowhere informed me that my position was at risk of being cut. Guess I interpreted that wrong. My TGIF became OMG. And I only share this because this is my story that I can tell the best. Other people, I'm sure, have ones that they can tell better for themselves. So I've been thinking about how much our programs, and you know, which support, save our districts quite a lot of money. I mean, we research, and we found it's about $140,000 per student, approximately, per year. So that's twice my salary. And as Dr. Spadaro had said, you know, other districts are utilizing our amazing programs and making those funds for our district. Please reconsider laying off support staff that save and make our district money as well. And most importantly, keep our students within their own community and new members from other districts.
School board members also pressed for answers. Board member Nicole Parrott raised concerns that the cuts could hurt special education programs the hardest.
I really worry that we may be looking at, specifically for talking speech, I'm worried that we may just be looking at what is mandated and not necessarily what is necessary. Speech improvement helps kids who are very young, K-1, K-2. Intervention, the better their outcomes are. We know that. So I just worry that if we cut too far in that area, we could be doing more harm and the kids will still need the service, but just later on. And then it's not as effective.
Spadaro told Radio Catskill that students will not see any changes to program offerings.
I want to add that this budget, all of our student programs will be offered. All of our academics are still offered. All of our CTE offerings, all of our sports, our award-winning music programs, all of these programs that we offer to our students this year, the same offerings will be next year. So it's going to have a minimal impact on what is offered to students next year.
But that could be challenging, depending on which positions are actually eliminated. Some electives would be reduced if teacher positions are cut. For instance,
Black history is offered once per semester. If we reduce a social studies position, that would only be offered once per year. History of rock and roll is offered now once per semester. It would only be offered once per year. And all electives will still be available, but they'll be offered yearly and not by semester.
The proposed budget has even energized the student body. Rondout Valley High School students walked out during the school day on Tuesday to protest the cuts. Robert McDonough, a social studies teacher and union board president for the Rondout Valley Federation, says the budget cuts have fired up the union to mobilize.
We all came together because we've all had enough, and we've had enough of this board hiding behind closed doors, making decisions, backing the poor decisions that are being made without asking questions. But I also want to make the point that I think things are going to change. I think we saw last night the board is understanding this, and even some of the board, I think last night was eye-opening for them. So it's not just the community. So I actually have faith and hope that moving forward, this last night was good and it's going to lead to change.
Superintendent Spadaro says the district will take the board and community's feedback and present an updated budget on April 7th. In Ackard, New York, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
Coming up next, Wayne County Veterans Affairs expanding services for vets and their families, and why officials say it's never too late to apply for the benefits you've earned. Stay with us. This is Radio Catskill.
Hello, Radio Catskill listeners. This is Andy Carlson, and I'm inviting you to join me Thursday nights for 2 hours of genre-bending exploration of the American rock songbook on Ramble Tamble. I'll be bringing you everything from John Prine to PJ Harvey, Steely Dan to Steppenwolf, and just about everything in between. That's Ramble Tamble, Thursday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Wayne County is working to make sure no veteran falls through the cracks. The county's Veterans Affairs Office is expanding its outreach and staff this year with a renewed push to connect former service members and their families with benefits they may not even know or realize they've earned. From reaching veterans in rural communities to encouraging those who were denied in the past to try again, officials say the goal is simple: make sure every veteran in Wayne County is seen, supported, and served. Joining us now, Director Frank Araujo and Outreach Coordinator Jessica Stiff to tell us more. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Frank, tell us a little bit more about your objectives for the VA office this year.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us. And, you know, it's an exciting time here in Wayne County, especially for the our office. You know, we're not just here to share our updates, but I want to introduce our expanded team, you know, Jessica Stiff. And she's now transitioned from a one-man show into a two-man team.
That's good to have the support. Jessica, welcome aboard there. And to reach every veteran in the county and to boost awareness of the office and the services, those are some of your objectives. Jessica, how's it going so far? And why do you think it's so important to join this team and grow the staff?
Good morning. Yeah, things are going really well. It's super busy. We're starting to get the word out there to more and more vets. Hopefully they're sharing it with their friends. And yeah, the vets, they've earned this benefits and they should be have access to them. So we're hoping to get that through.
How are you reaching vets, especially in the rural areas, who might feel out of the loop?
Well, and that being rural is definitely a challenge. And you know, one of the ways we do it mostly is through our Facebook, but word of mouth is kind of what we're kind of counting on. But we're also working on trying to develop a flyer that we can possibly get sent out to the masses, and we're still working on those details for now.
I mentioned in the introduction that some veterans who may have been denied years ago may have given up. Talk a little bit about them trying again and why that's so important.
Yeah, so that is important, and it's important to highlight that, you know, maybe a no, you know, several years ago or decades ago doesn't automatically mean a no now. You know, because oftentimes when the VA, they expand their legislation or their rules and regulations, introducing different, rules for the veterans, it changes how they may or may not qualify for certain benefits.
Also emphasizing not just about veterans, but the whole family. Talk a little bit more about how that works.
Yeah, certainly. So, but to kind of like go back on what you said, the first question was with the PACT Act is one of the programs that they implemented, which really did expand the list of presumptive conditions that does give the veteran from way decades ago an opportunity to qualify more for benefits that, you know, again, which they earned. And speaking on the family, you know, when the veteran gets awarded, the family gets awarded. And not only the family, the community benefits as well, as far as, you know, with if a veteran gets compensated, you know, they get spent in the community, the money that is there awarded. But in addition to that, the when you're talking about like family, so spouses, they may be eligible for Camp VA health care. Sometimes it's maybe it's Chapter 35 education assistance. And, you know, and then when the time comes, you know, there's survivor benefits as well.
Women are a fast-growing group in the veteran community. How's your office making sure women vets feel supported?
Well, one of the areas is with me being here, we're hoping that if any women wanted to come in initially, they'll have somebody to talk to that might be more relatable with them. I know sometimes women feel uncomfortable talking with men versus women or vice versa. So we have more options now. The office is set up to feel more secure, more comforting to whoever wants to come in and more available to everybody.
Let folks know.
And I'd like to
yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to add to that, you know, a lot of the female veterans, they feel invisible, you know, like an invisible status. And, you know, we understand that they are professionals and community leaders, and maybe they just see themselves as moms, but, you know, that isn't the case. So I just wanted to double down on what Jessica said. You know, having a female veteran service officer here can be an important aspect for her or for them.
And let's let folks know about some of the programs that vets can participate in and where they can find the programs and events your office hosts.
So one of the events we host is it's a monthly chat and chow. We have an organization that come in and present how their services will cater to veterans, and they vary from various organizations within the community. And it's a monthly, the last Wednesday from 11 to 1 here in the conference room at 926 Court Street, which is to the left of the courthouse.
And where can folks get information online or by phone to contact you guys for more information?
Sure. So our Facebook is Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, Wayne County, PA. And also if you go to the Wayne County official website and you look under the government tab and scroll down to the bottom, there's a Veterans Affairs tab, and you can click on there and it has all of our information, phone, fax, address, and our office hours, which is Monday to Friday, 8:30 to 4:30.
That's Frank Araujo and Jessica Stiff of Wayne County Veterans Affairs. Thank you guys so much, and congratulations on the new position, Jessica.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break, and coming up next, inside the Borscht Belt rivalry for top spiritual talent, where even Metropolitan Opera stars led holiday services. That's next on Radio Chatskill.
Hi, it's Callison Stratton. Join me for a special live edition of Liberation Station tomorrow evening at the Parlor in Narrowsburg. We're celebrating Women's History Month and supporting Radio Catskill with drinks, raffles, and prizes from local women-owned businesses and live music from the Basic Bitches, iLeash, Masha Sokol, and more. $20 suggested donation at the door. Don't miss this live event, 7:30 tomorrow evening at the Parlor in Narrowsburg.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're going to hear from Callison Stratton live about that live event in just a few minutes. But first, the Borscht Belt was famous for big-name comedians, lavish spreads, and packed hotel nightclubs. But during the high holidays, those same stages transformed into something more spiritual as top cantors became headline attractions. This weekend in Ellenville, a new program at the Borscht Belt Museum takes a closer look at the unique blend of show business and faith. Ronald Kelson spoke with historian Henry Sapoznik and pop culture expert Danny Fingeroth about when showbiz went to shul, star Catskills cantors.
For those who aren't familiar, what is a cantor? What's their role in the synagogue? How are they different from a rabbi? Henry, do you want to start?
Sure. Cantor, the Hebrew name for them is Shaliach Tzibur, which means messenger of the people. And what the rabbi does in terms of spoken and recited text, the cantor does with music. And they both fulfill the function of transmitting the content, and the cantor with music adds the level of musical emotion, which underscores the text.
Danny, anything to add on that?
Yes, I mean, that is completely true. I would add that traditionally there is sort of a rivalry between rabbis and cantors, although many cantors are ordained rabbis, as my father was. But I think the rabbi always thinks that his sermon is the most important part of the service, and the cantor generally thinks that his singing is the most important part of the service.
To set a little bit more of the scene, how did the Borscht Belt up here become the Borscht Belt? Why were there so many Jewish people up here? How did this all happen?
Well, this really goes back to the beginning of the 20th century, when this was seen as an area where especially Jews who had tuberculosis or illnesses were encouraged to go to what they called the mountains for their health. And it was also the spear point of a movement of agrarian Jews to move out of urban areas and to try to establish a relationship with going back to the land. The hotels, which were the outgrowth of hospitality of farm keepers and so forth, happened because there were already hospitality centers in the Catskills, which were restricted. Jews were not allowed to attend. So these places opened as an alternative. And as my immigration of Jews from Eastern Europe increased, the travel from New York City
to the Catskills became a lifeline for a whole generation of Jews, and the transition from farmhouses to small bungalow colonies called kachalanes to the hotels happened over a period of decades.
And I think it was important that a lot of, I mean, pretty much all the Jewish hotels, except maybe the ones that catered to a more secular left-wing crowd, were kosher. I mean, that was, I think, even Jews who were not especially religious, many of them kept some form of kosher observance, and especially if they were coming up for the holidays.
The kosher thing was, it's interesting, I write about this in my new book, The Tourist's Guide to Lost Yiddish New York City, and the establishment of a kosher food industry at the end of the 19th century. It's interesting that there was already a robust kosher style in food industry, which emerged at the same time. And even people, like you say, who were left-wing or progressive or worldly, adhered to, they wanted a style of food that evoked their upbringing, despite their other political changes.
When we talk about the Borscht Belt, we often hear most prominently about the entertainment component of it, comedians, musicians, athletes, venues, but we may not often hear about the synagogues, the religious life of these people living here. How important were synagogues? Were they still the center of life for Jews in society, or was there something different about them?
Well, I think the hotels catered to audiences actually from the city. There was an overlap in the Venn diagrams of liturgical music and show business, which is sort of what distinguished the Catskills hotels. If somebody wanted a serious, meaningful, profound service, they could stay home, right? And if that was an important thing to them, to go to services and to go to seders, and they really felt part of a community, they'd stay home. What they came to the Catskills for, of course, was a vacation and lots of food and fresh air, but on the holidays, what they came for was to see these superstar cantors who were celebrities in a very narrow area. So, like, the way the hotels competed for the top, you know, advertising who had the top comedians and who had the top singers on the, you know, on the high holidays and on Passover, they competed for who had the top cantors. What impelled me and Henry to do this event in the first place was that we are the sons of Catskills cantors who were celebrities, but in a very narrow slice of the population. So we had fathers who were famous, but nobody ever heard of them. It's a very odd contradiction to live with and to witness. There were some crossover performers, because that's really, I think, at the root of this is performance. People coming, certainly to have, I'm sure many came for a spiritual religious experience, but many of them just came to see these cantors who were either operatically influenced or jazz influenced or in some ways crossover with popular culture. I was just researching some clips that we may show at the event on Sunday, and I came across Jan Pierce, who was a Metropolitan Opera star on the Ed Sullivan Show, saying the Kiddush for Passover. I mean, so I think those worlds all intersected and overlapped. So you could go from somebody who would sing a very soulful, meaningful service or seder, and then the next day he's on the Ed Sullivan Show, and then the next day he's at the Metropolitan Opera singing the lead in a German or Italian opera.
Yeah, let's get to the reason why we're all here. You guys, Danny Figueroth and Henry Zapoznik, will be part of a panel this Sunday, March 29th at 2 p.m. when Showbiz Went to Shul, Star Catskills Cantors at the Borscht Belt Museum in Ellenville. As you said, both of your fathers were cantors at this time, and I was wondering if you had any stories from your fathers, maybe something spicy, maybe where things got heated, anything memorable of note from these competitions where hotels were competing to get the top cantors to their congregations.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because maybe one reason that it was appealing to these guys, I'll speak about my father, but I think it may, the Nevely got a twofer deal with my dad. He was the rabbi and the cantor, you know, and certainly the selling point was his voice, but he, you know, and I don't remember him giving sermons, but I remember him doing the Yom Kippur appeal, and it was on behalf of the Ellenville Boys Club, which was the, I think, the pet charity of the Slutsky family, who were the owners of the Nevely. So I think one appeal to cantors to come to the Catskills was they, you know, they had a choir backing them up, but they didn't have to compete with a rabbi. I mean, at least that was my dad's case. And I don't, in my memory or knowledge, there definitely were hotels that had a rabbi and a cantor, but the Nevely, where my dad was a cantor for 15 years in the 50s and 60s, it was just him. Henry, does your memory differ?
The strata of the hotels, the Nevely was way bigger. My father and I sang in choirs with him from when I was six. So the hotels that we sang at were not as lush as places like the Nevely. We sang at the Normandy, the Gratis, the Majestic. And the status of, and I think it may have been the constituency, the people who would have recognized my father's name were other immigrants. They weren't necessarily, unlike your father, who was here and had established a high visibility before the war. The post-war market reflected a smaller number of people. So my father didn't have like a lot of, he followed, for example, he followed larger cantors. So the cantor like Moshe Kusevitsky, who was one of the major stars, one of the major stars who didn't sing opera, that gave a kind of an imprimatur to my father, who then followed up. But like our status at these hotels was pretty modest. Like I don't remember in all the years we were at the Normandy, we were never put up in the hotel itself. We always stayed in an outbuilding out where the chicken coops used to be. So it was a different status for cantors, almost kind of like let's get it over with. Let's, you know, we'll have this guy in, even though he was internationally famous. So it just reflected the change in how, again, this was one of the last generations of people who really liked this form of cantorial music. In a couple of years, this form of cantorial singing would disappear because there was a big change in how congregations wanted their services. They no longer wanted the shliach tzibur, the artistic interpreter. They wanted congregational singing. They wanted simple melodies that everyone could join in on. So by then, the needs of the cantors had become even less dynamic than it had been previously.
Well, I think that's why we called it When Showbiz Went to Shul, because I think our fathers were part, right, of a different school and a different outlook where, it's, that has not disappeared entirely. There certainly are plenty of synagogues where, you know, to this day, you know, that pride themselves on the vocal quality of their cantor, but it was much more common, and it was such an attraction that the hotels would compete for these star cantors. So people were less interested in participating, and in their own way, they were as demanding, you know, as demanding as the audiences could be for the comedians in the nightclubs at the hotels at night. I think the people at the who came to services were equally demanding and discerning. You know, there's an old saying that everybody has two businesses, their own business and show business. You know, I think with the Catskills, for people who came for the holidays, everybody maybe had a third business, which was that they were all experts in cantorial music and cantorial singing, and who was the top practitioners.
What can folks expect from this panel?
Pretty much this, right? I mean, we're going to talk about our experiences. I have, like, you know, the stories. I'm going to tell the story about how when we were at the Normandy in the early 60s, and one of the entertainers who came up was Jackie Mason, and this was, like, right after he had gotten kicked off the Ed Sullivan Show for giving Ed Sullivan the finger. And as a kid, I was nine, and I snuck into the midnight show that Jackie Mason gave, and his whole act, the entire act, was him going, walking back up and back the stage, doing a coarse impersonation of Ed Sullivan while holding up his middle finger and saying, "You give me the finger, I'll give you the finger." And I'm still laughing. I remember people were choking. We're rolling on the floor, unable to breathe because it was so funny. So it's about the stories. It's about the memory. It's about this unbelievable moment of hospitality and cultural uplift that couldn't be sustained because it was so astounding. And it was built on tradition as much as it was built on commerce.
And we will have at least one and possibly two actual cantors who sang in the Catskills. A guy named Sam Josephson has just been added to the roster. Avi Zablocki may or may not be joining us. He is stuck in Israel, actually. So he may join us either with a video. But there may be some actual singing and performing, not by me. I am.
Oh, I'll get you to sing. You can't get out of this that easy, Danny. I got an idea for how to close the show. That's gonna give you something to do. So yes.
Okay. Well, I somehow had a feeling that something like that was going to happen, but it will be entertaining. And if you're in the area, I'd really say come to the museum. It is going to be live streamed. But really, if you're there, you know, come see us, you know, because who knows what'll happen. That's the beauty of live performance, which was always, I mean, just to bring it back, you know, as many years, and my father grew up, he was the son of a cantor. He and my grandfather and my father were a father and son cantorial team in the Bronx. My father had been a pulpit cantor in the 30s and 40s, and then in the 50s and 60s, he was a partner in a kosher catering business in the Bronx, where extra fee you could get the famous cantor finger out to perform your wedding or bar mitzvah. And yet, he was always, I wouldn't say a nervous wreck, but there was a lot of anxiety. You know, even though my father had literally been singing since he was 4 years old for a living, there was still performance anxiety because he knew, you know, that the people the people who came to the Neveli and spent a whole lot on spending a week there for the holidays were expecting a big show.
That's Danny Figueroff and Henry Zapoznik. They'll be part of a panel this Sunday, March 29th at 2 p.m. when Showbiz Went to Shul, Star Catskill Cantors at the Borscht Belt Museum on 90 Canal Street in Ellenville. You can get your tickets at borschtbeltmuseum.org. Danny and Henry, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great show, and Chag Pesach Sameach.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to our Ronald Kelson for that report. Before we go, we've got time to talk to another one of our family members. It is Callison Stratton from Liberation Station. Callison, hi.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Now, normally your show is Saturday nights at 7. It still will be. But this week we have a special live edition of Liberation Station. Tell us about that tomorrow.
We're very excited for Liberation Station Live at the Parlor in Narrowsburg. That's in the downstairs area of the shops at Narrowsburg, sort of just right around from La Cigone. And it's going to be a really fun event. We've got, just like Liberation Station always is a show that highlights the work of female and femme presenting performers. Tomorrow night's show is a lineup of all local female artists. So we have Zara Cabanas playing the ukulele and a little drum machine. We have Masha Sokol, Eilish, Odetta Hartman, Jamie Smith, and the Basic Bitches. So it's going to be great really, lineup. And I will also be playing a couple of songs, you know.
Of course. Great lineup. What prompted you to do Liberation Station Live? What was the motivation here?
So my friend Susan Mendoza, who owns and operates the Chi Hive and also is a creative director at the Parlor Presents, came to me with this idea. She wanted to raise some money for Radio Catskill and do something for Women's Month. And since my show Liberation Station already highlights women and actually is celebrating 3 years on the air this month, very exciting. We thought it would be a really wonderful way for Liberation Station and the Parlor to collaborate and then bring in, you know, all of the female artists. You know, we have a really wonderful and vibrant music scene here in the Catskills, but I've never once seen an all-female lineup.
So this
was a really great thing.
And you guys came to us with this idea and we're like, hey, great, this sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. You hadn't signed up anybody yet. So were you surprised about the reaction?
I was not at all surprised. I knew everyone was going to be really on board for this event. And, you know, like I said, there's so many wonderful female artists in our area. And everyone I had like a short list of folks that I was like, oh, I'm going to ask them first. And if they can't make it, and then like one person couldn't make it and everybody else was like, yeah, we're on board. Awesome. So that was really, really fun. And we might have some other special guests jumping in, which will be exciting. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, we're going to try to keep it to fairly tight sets. Everyone's going to have like 15 to 20 minutes to showcase their work. And then the Basic Bitches will close us off with like a really fun rock and roll dance party. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. We don't see a lot of all-female lineups. Are you hoping this becomes maybe a tradition or something more regular?
That is the dream. I think an annual Women's Month celebration of all, you know, all-female artists, local and maybe bring some from afar would be a really fun thing to do. And then to be able to showcase their work on Liberation Station and also raise a little bit of money for Radio Catskill.
Well, we appreciate that.
Cherry on top.
That's amazing. And let's remind folks again of the details and where they can get more information.
So you can find out more information at my Instagram page, Liberation Station Radio. We have a wonderful flyer. There's flyers all over Narrowsburg. But it's tomorrow night, March 27th at 7:30, doors at 7 at the Parlor in Narrowsburg, at the shops at Narrowsburg, 90 Main Street.
All right. And you're wearing your Liberation Station t-shirt.
Yes, I am. I just got new t-shirts made, and you can find the t-shirts on my shop at calisonmusic.com, and you've got we've got a nice little shop where you can buy all Liberation Station merch. You can get tote bags and t-shirts and crop tops, and we'll also be we'll have a little QR code linked where you can buy merch there tomorrow night, and we'll also be selling Radio Catskill merch, of course. Yes. And also, all of our artists will be having we'll have a merch table for our artists, and we will also be raffling off prizes from local businesses. So we've got a gift basket from the Calican Pantry. Busy Koi is raffling off a 20-page writing critique. So we'll have a lot of really fun ways for people to raise money.
I love the t-shirts, but I'm just going to pass on the crop top, and I think I'm doing a public service.
Are you sure?
It's Liberation Station Live tomorrow night. And of course, listen to Liberation Station on Saturdays at 7 every Saturday here at Radio Catskill. Calisson Stratton, thank you so much. And thanks so much for doing this. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you, Tim.
That's it for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, with campuses in Harris and Calicoon, offering inpatient and outpatient services to Sullivan County and surrounding communities. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Feel like you're just spinning in an endless whirlpool of information? We can help steady you.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, co-host of On the Media, and we point out where you should be paying attention and what you can afford to ignore. Using the media as a lens on our world, we reveal nuance and detail often missed by other outlets. So don't miss On the Media, Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill Local News, Culture, and NPR. Today's weather, a couple of afternoon showers, warming up to 69 degrees. Some rain and drizzle tonight, a low of 38. It'll be breezy and cooler tomorrow, high of only 47, 20 for the low tomorrow night, and Saturday's high only 32, but partly sunny, and warming up to 48 with some clouds and sun on Sunday. On Point is coming up next. It's 11 o'clock.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.